On the other hand, the group souls of many highly evolved dogs miss out having to inhabit the bodies of the lowest form of human life known, and are born into bodies of a more evolved type of man, probably as members of tribes who for generations have served mankind, before passing on to the early lives of the human race with its tremendous differences from life in the animal kingdom. I must mention the case of the animal which individualizes as a human being, whilst still occupying an animal body. The transfer from the animal sphere to the human must take place when the right time comes, when all fear is gone, and when the love side of the animal has been sufficiently developed. In the case where one dog, which is half a group soul, has died a natural death, and where the second half of the group soul, another dog, remains alive but has no more lessons to learn, this dog becomes a human being in everything other than form. Doubtless you have come across cases where a dog in later life seemed almost human, where it appeared to understand almost every word that was said to it, and where its uncanny understanding of your thoughts and actions savored of an intuition beyond what you imagined to be possible in an animal. Such a dog is in fact a human dog, an animal in form, but a human in intelligence, and one able to reason and make decisions for which it alone would be responsible. Apostrophe The main difference between a human being and an animal is the faculty of reason, and with it the gifts of free will. A man knows the difference between right and wrong. Even in his early lives as a human being he can make his own decisions, whereas an animal has to obey the laws of the animal world. An animal lives by instinct, and outside the limits of instinct it cannot think. A man can choose the evil path, even though he knows it is evil and against the progressive forces that rule the world, but an animal must ever act as its instinct compels it, for such is the law. Once again I did not see him go, for my mind was so full of these strange ideas. I decided to write down everything I could remember of these two talks, and came to the conclusion that I would make shorthand notes of all future talks. Chapter 2 So you have been writing down what I have said to you, that is good. Today again I had not seen my teacher enter, for I was rereading through the notes I had made. Yes, I answered, but how did you know what I had been doing? You told me so yourself last night, when you were asleep and out of your body, he replied. I do not propose to explain to you now how you told me last night that you had decided to keep a full record of my talks. When I have finished my visits, you will understand everything so clearly that you will be able to answer such questions yourself. He was enthusiastic about my decision to take notes and told me that he would be only too pleased to add to my record of the past 2 days. I noticed that he did not alter a single word of my script so far as the record had gone, but he spent some little time in filling in the blanks I had left when I could not remember facts exactly. You will remember I told you that the keynote of the animal kingdom was self-preservation. How different is the keynote of the human kingdom, for it is self-sacrifice. Although this is the important standard for any human life, there are other laws, which must be understood by those who seek to discover the secrets of the evolutionary path. These are, of course, different from those governing animals, and yet, for the first few lives lived by the unevolved man, he is more animal than man. Although he has shaken off his fear of man, the practices brought over from the animal kingdom, where he took what he could by virtue of his brain power or his physical strength, still persist. The first important law which operates in the human kingdom is the law of reincarnation. This law asserts that an ego, once individualized, returns again and again to incarnate in a human physical body until such time as he had learned, by experience in all types of surroundings, all the lessons that can be learned under physical conditions. When the life force progresses through the mineral and vegetable kingdoms, this law exists to a limited extent, but it is not very apparent. In the animal kingdom it also exists, still only to a limited extent as there are as yet no separate entities, but it unfolds itself during the period of evolution after the ego has individualized into the human kingdom. The second important law, which operates for humans though not for animals, is the law of karma, often referred to as the law of cause and effect. From the moment that the group soul becomes a separate ego, this law operates. The law of karma decrees that every thought, word or action that emanates from man must produce a definite result, either good or bad, and that result must be worked out by us in our lives at the physical level. There is nothing unfair in this, for as the Christian teaching has it, as you sow, so shall you reap. According to the law of karma, a selfish act on your part which causes untold misery to another soul, earns a unit of bad karma which must be paid for by your suffering from a similar action at the hand of another, either in this life or in a life to come. In like manner, a kind act on your part means that a unit of good karma has been earned by you, the result of which must be either a wiping off of a unit of bad karma made by you, the good offsetting the bad, or the gift of the same amount of kindness from a different source. When a new ego starts his human lives, the number of foolish or evil actions, thoughts and words naturally far exceed those of a beneficent kind, and if the law worked literally, the man would lead a life of perpetual misery and suffering, caused entirely by his own actions, thoughts and words, each producing its just result. Such a life would be intolerable and impossible to live. Suicide would soon become the practice amongst young souls. A more humane method is adopted, however, whereby, in any one life, no man is expected to suffer more than he can stand, and the units of bad karma made by him in that life through inexperience, and which have not been paid off or negatived by similar units of good karma, are carried forward for working out in future lives. The result of this arrangement, which may be likened to a bank overdraft, is that during the first 200 or more incarnations, the man continually adds to that overdraft. But all this time he is creating what we call the voice of conscience. As that still small voice is built up by the experiences the ego gleans in his different human bodies, it does not operate appreciably for many lives. Here is an example: an unevolved man, knowing little of the ways of the human, but much of the ways of the animal world, desires to possess something owned by another. His animal instinct is to take that which he desires by force. If he is strong enough, he tries to do so. A fight ensues, resulting in the death of another human being. The laws of governing man then come into force. The murderer is arrested, tried and put to death. The reservoir of knowledge, which exists at the higher mental level, notes the result of such an action, and in a future life, when the same man in a different body wishes to possess something owned by another, he is warned by the voice of experience, his conscience, that if he kills his enemy, he himself will suffer the same fate at the hands of the state. In this manner, gradually, the reservoir of knowledge is built up, each major happening in the lives lived being registered for the purpose of a warning in a life to come. From this simple explanation, it can easily be understood that a man who has a sensitive conscience and who listens to it, must be an old soul, for he could not have an efficient conscience unless he had much experience in the past lives in which his conscience, or reservoir of knowledge, was built up. For perhaps 200 lives, each life lived produces more units of bad karma than good. Some are paid off in each life through suffering and misfortune, but the balance is transferred to the overdraft. As ego becomes more evolved, really more experienced, common sense teaches him that evil produces trouble for himself, whereas good and kind actions result in happiness and the accumulation of friends. In this manner, he evolves to a stage where the number of units of bad karma made in a single life is exceeded by the number of units of good karma earned by good actions. This constitutes a very important stage in a man's development, because from this point on, he becomes a really useful and valuable member of society. In all his future lives, before the new incarnation commences, a small percentage of his overdraft is allotted to him for paying off in that particular life, and that quota must be paid off, in addition to any units of evil karma made in the life itself. Positive acts of kindness will bring him much happiness and help him along the road. In ways such as these, all natural laws can be seen to dovetail one into another, rather like the pieces of a jigsaw puzzle. My task is to present to you the pieces of this puzzle, with which you must eventually learn to make a picture. In order that you may understand how it is possible for the members of the human kingdom to gain all their necessary experience, I want you to accept the following propositions. 1. That man is an ego, or soul, and in the course of his evolution from an undeveloped state, the savage, to that of a perfect man, he has to use three vehicles of consciousness or bodies. These are known as the mental or mind body, the astral or emotional body, and the physical body. The last is the one, which you and I are functioning in and which is visible to the human eye. 2. That these three bodies are used by us when functioning in the three different states of consciousness, which are the mental plane, the astral plane, and the physical plane. 3. That the home of the ego around which these bodies are drawn, is the upper part of the mental world. This is known as the casual level. When the ego starts from the casual level for a new incarnation, he has to have one of each of these three bodies. I want you to visualize the ego as a naked man, preparing to clothe himself with his three coverings or bodies. The least dense in texture is the mental body, and this the ego draws round himself from the matter of which the mental world is constructed. This can be likened to the underclothes of a man. The type of mental body that each can get is in accordance with his mental development at the end of his last incarnation. So obviously the mental body of an unevolved man is very different from that of an evolved being, an old soul, one who has had many lives and has gained much experience. The ego next draws around himself a slightly coarser vehicle, made of the latter of the astral world. This body is, as it were, on top of or outside the mental body, and the type of the body is gained in accordance with the man's emotional development. The astral body therefore can be likened to the man's suit of clothes. A still coarser and denser body is now required, and to obtain this, a body has to be found by physical means at the physical level. In other words, a woman, with the assistance of a man, produces a child. This new physical body is also in accordance with the man's deserts, with his karma made in previous lives. The physical body corresponds to the man's overcoat. So every man you see at the physical level is, as it were, wearing three bodies, each one under the other, but owing to the density of the outside body, the physical, it is impossible to see the other two. When a man dies, all that happens is that he drops his physical body, his overcoat. The man is still there, clothed in his astral and mental bodies, the astral being the denser, is on the outside, the mental is under the astral. Before I explain what actually happens after death, I must tell you a little more about bodies. The physical body, that which we all see with our eyes, is composed of fairly dense physical matter, but there is also a less dense part of that body, called the etheric double. In ancient Egypt it was referred to as the ka, which plays a very important part, both during the lifetime and at the death of our physical vehicle. It is not a body in the ordinary sense of the word, in that you cannot live in it, as you can in your physical body. You cannot even see it, unless you have developed the lowest form of clairvoyance, which is called etheric sight. Apostrophe the matter of which this etheric body is composed, also surrounds our nerves. There is a concept of electricity that the current runs, not along the wire but along a coating of etheric matter, which surrounds it. That is true also of the nerve action of the body. The nerve currents do not actually run along the white thread of the physical nerve, but along a coating of etheric matter, which surrounds it. So that if this coating is removed from the physical nerve, we do not get any sensation. This is what happens when an anesthetic is used. In the case of a local anesthetic, the etheric matter which conducts the feeling is driven away a short distance from the particular nerve. The white nerve is still there, plain to see, yet when it is cut, the patient feels nothing. When a much more powerful general anesthetic is given for a major operation, which necessitates the patient being unconscious and devoid of feeling for a considerable time, the etheric matter is driven away almost entirely from the dense body. If it is entirely driven out, then the patient dies. This is what has happened when a patient occasionally dies while under the effect of an anesthetic. A little too much has been given and the etheric matter which has been driven out cannot get back. S24. This etheric matter, gossamer in texture and extremely elastic, which is such an important part of the physical body, has another function. It acts as a liaison or link between the physical and the astral bodies during sleep. When you, the ego, disconnect yourself from your physical body, lying on the bed, a cord of etheric matter attached to your astral body, with its main bulk remaining in and around the physical body, stretches out as you travel to any part of the world that you wish. However far you go, this physical link with your body on the bed remains. When the time comes for the body to awaken, an SOS is sent out along this etheric cord to you, wherever you are, and you must return to your physical body and re-enter it, then wake up and carry on with your duties at this level. When you go to sleep, you, the ego, slip out of your physical body at the moment when it loses consciousness. You are clothed in your astral body and living in the astral world, under astral plane conditions. You are free to go wherever you will, leaving your physical body on the bed, where it is resting and gaining strength for the next day's work. It is only the limited physical body, which requires rest, in the same way that it requires regular food and drink to sustain it in health and life. You, the ego, need no rest. In your astral body you move about quite easily and can travel to any distance. At the astral level the force of gravity does not exist, so you glide along and it makes no difference whether it is land or sea that you are crossing, as you are not affected by either. The distance you can cover in the few short hours that the physical body is resting, is more or less unlimited. When I tell you that you can travel round the world in about 2.5 minutes, it gives you some idea of the speed that can be attained. Apostrophe the astral body, which is composed of much finer matter than the physical one, is drawn round the ego on his way down into incarnation. It fills what we call the casual body, forming an ovoid of luminous mist. But the physical body, being denser, has a very strong attraction for the astral matter, and draws this closer to it, so that we have an astral reproduction of the physical form in the center of that ovoid, and though the astral body is just as recognizable by features as the physical body, only it is built of finer matter. When the physical body dies, there is no longer any need for the astral body to adapt itself, so the tendency is for it to remain exactly as it was at the time when the physical body ceased to exist, and not grow any larger. The reason for this is that the astral body is not a vehicle with organs, bones, flesh and blood like the physical, but rather a body of mist. During his lifetime a man has the opportunity of living under astral plane conditions every time his body is asleep, but in actual fact it is only the man who's standing in evolution is above the average who takes full advantage of these opportunities. The young soul, or unevolved ego, certainly gets out of his body during sleep. He cannot help doing so, but his intelligence, mental or mind-body, is not sufficiently developed to furnish him with the amount of knowledge necessary before he can use all his faculties to their highest extent. Therefore, he usually hangs about near his sleeping body, waiting for the call to re-enter it when it has slept long enough and wishes to wake. Thus he can never become accustomed to astral plane conditions in the same way as the older ego. When a man of this type dies and no longer has a physical body, he feels that he is in a completely strange world. There are times, immediately after death, when such a man craves for the physical life which he knows, but he can do nothing to regain it, for when the etheric matter has all been withdrawn from a physical body, it cannot be put back. Death of the physical body is caused in numerous ways by illness, when the body finds it impossible to function properly, by old age, when the body is worn out, by accidents in which the vital parts of the body have been irretrievably damaged. In all such cases the etheric part of the physical body has been forced out of the dense part, merely because the dense body can no longer perform its proper functions, and without this body, the etheric double cannot live. At the moment of death, when the heart ceases to beat, the etheric double registers extreme fear and wraps itself round the outside of the astral body in which the man is standing, since he was forced out of the physical body at the time death took place. The etheric part of the physical body knows that the death of the denser part means also death for itself and, in its desire to continue its existence, it clings to the astral body of the man, hoping to survive longer. By an effort of will, the man can easily rid himself of this encumbrance. Until he does, he is suspended between the two worlds of consciousness. He cannot function on the physical plane, for he has lost his physical body, and he cannot function properly on the astral plane, because the clinging etheric matter makes it impossible for him either to see or hear properly. Men who die fearing death often refuse to make the necessary effort of will, which they are told to make by friends who meet them on the other side, but hang on to the remaining particles of physical matter in the hope of continuing their physical existence, the physical life being the only one they know. It is no use fighting, of course, for sooner or later they must let go and make the effort of will that I have mentioned. Resisting the inevitable only causes them to be suspended between the two worlds for a much longer time than is necessary. A man who has acquired some knowledge of the subject of death by studying cognate subjects during his lifetime, will at once shake himself free from this encumbrance and take up his life again under what I may perhaps call permanent astral conditions. I say permanent because now that he has lost his physical body and will not get another until the time is ripe for him to reincarnate again and spend another short period of time in the physical world, he will be living under astral plane conditions during the day as well as during the night. Immediately the effort of will to get rid of the etheric double is made, the etheric matter falls away and starts to disintegrate in much the same way that the dense physical body disintegrates, but whilst it may be months or years before the disintegration of the physical body is complete, the etheric part of it, being much finer and lighter in weight, returns to dust almost immediately. Now that the physical body is no longer attached, the ego is clothed in his astral body and will function in this body as long as he remains in the astral world. The astral world is the world of emotions and illusions. It is composed of matter which is finer than any gas we know, in which are many degrees of density. The astral body is the vehicle of emotions. Emotions are brought about by vibrations of the astral matter, what are known as the higher emotions, love, gratitude, unselfishness and the like, show themselves to clairvoyant vision as vibrations of the finer matter, whilst the lower emotions, greed, envy, jealousy, selfish love, akin to passion, pride etc., show as vibrations of relatively much coarser, or denser, matter. As man is, prior to death, so he will be after death, minus only his physical body and without physical, but, owing to the fluidic nature of the astral body, they become forces of great good or evil. Thus a feeling of slight antagonism at the physical level, becomes their sheer hate, with unpleasant results to both parties, whilst one of mild physical affection would draw out reciprocal outpouring of love, which would produce an amazing atmosphere of harmony and peace. As the astral world is the world of illusion, no time or labor need be used as in the physical world. Everything, clothes, food etc., is produced by thought. Life there can be one long holiday. We can devote ourselves to whatever we really desire to do and indulge in hobbies to our heart's content. There are no limitations to prevent us acquiring more knowledge, such as insufficient time to study or the physical limitations of weak sight or a tired body. There is nothing in the astral body which can tire. Whilst our physical bodies sleep, we function at the astral level in our bodies and there meet friends and relations who have died, so it is foolish to try to forget about these people in the daytime, for they are all around us, the only separation being the limitation of consciousness. In many ways it is a pity so few people remember what they do at night. If they did, they would be much less troubled about the state called death, and the wicked rumors circulated concerning hell and eternal damnation would have no more effect on them than the fear of the ogre in the children's fairy book affects the adult reader. Very few people realize that in the physical world, The average man spends most of his time working in an office or in a shop or on the land, or in some occupation he would not choose, had it not been necessary to earn money for food, for drink and for clothes, both for himself and those dependent on him. It is perhaps just as well that so few people do realize this, as otherwise we should all be extremely discontented. That would be a hindrance to our evolution and would produce trouble everywhere. Only a few fortunate men are able to earn their living at what they like most. A painter or a musician, even though he be left a fortune, will continue with his work because, generally, his work is part of himself and becomes a pleasure. I shall give you a general outline of some of the conditions found on the astral plane. To the man who during his lifetime thought of little else but business, the next life will tend to be rather dull at first, especially if he has been in the habit of loving money for its own sake. Money is a purely physical thing and useless on the astral plane. This type of man will have to develop some other interest if he is to be really happy in the next world. If, however, a man were fond of music in his lifetime, then he will be fond of it after death and he will find many opportunities of satisfying the longings he was unable to satisfy before. If he wishes, the lover of music can spend the whole of his time listening to the finest music the world can produce. Distance is now no limitation. He may listen to an opera in London for a time, then with scarcely a minute's delay he can be listening to another performance in New York or Australia. He can meet the great musicians of the past, unless they have already reincarnated. He can see the mighty thought forms which music on the physical plane produces in the finer matter of the astral world. Even though during his lifetime he was unable to play, he can now produce music by imagination. On the physical plane there are many people who are able to imagine beautiful passages of music, but are unable to express themselves, owing to the lack of technique. On the astral plane all such people are to be envied indeed, as their natural cravings are for things not dependent on the help of purely physical plane conditions. For the man who is fond of art, all the masterpieces of the world are at his disposal, whether they be in art galleries or private collections. Many an art lover has long wanted to go to Rome. Think of the hours of delight for him devouring the works of art to be seen there and there alone. He may meet the artists of the past, and it must not be supposed that they lose interest in their work because they have died. Far from it, now they create beautiful thought forms, for they have no longer to use brushes and canvas to express their art. That was their only method of expression in the physical world. But after death the thought forms they create are just the same as pictures here, just as visible and much more beautiful. Many artists here have stated that they are always dissatisfied with their work when it is finished, even though the world applauds their genius. They often say, "If only I could express on canvas exactly what my imagination pictures," but never does it come exactly right. On the astral plane the pictures created are exactly what the artist perceives and so the creations of their imagination there are more beautiful than the finest pictures to be found in the world. Lovers of books also have a happy time, for the world's libraries are now open to their inspection. As an example of what happens to a man after death, take the sort of person who lives entirely for the physical plane life. By that I do not mean anything bad or that he is a man of many vices. On the contrary, he is probably an exceedingly popular man during his lifetime, always surrounded by a host of friends and generally spoken well of by all. Probably his pleasures consist of living well, attending theatres, dances etc., and doing the thousand and one things that go to make up the life of what is termed a man about town. Undoubtedly he is a successful businessman and considered a model husband, but all the same, his life, both business and pleasure, depends on physical things, such as are only obtainable on the physical plane. There are many such people, as everyone who looks around him can see. After death a man of this type will probably be extremely bored and will have practically nothing to do. He will soon realize that making thought forms of good dinners and intricate business deals becomes a very unsatisfactory method of killing time, when there are no physical results. He does not get the physical satisfaction to which he is accustomed after a good dinner, with choice wines, though he can imagine and even appreciate the taste of dishes and wines, which he used to have on earth. It is impossible for him to feel the same result after drinking alcohol that he felt during his lifetime, however much he may drink, and the feeling of repletion which follows a good dinner on the physical plane, is entirely absent from the astral meal.